Access number 30636, Mr. Malcolm Barker, Reel 11. Now, what about, we were talking about your time with 507 Railway Squadron, Royal Engineers at Gibraltar Barracks, Farnborough. Now, and we've looked it up now, you were in from 1977 to 1983, mm-hmm. So you were pretty old, you were 40.
Getting on a bit, yeah. Still fit.
Now, what about, we've talked about the training, you know, the range work and the NBC. What about the actual railway camps when you went for 2 weeks on the railway camp?
Well, there was one big one. It was called, I had it just now. Can't think of what it was. Well, it'll probably come to me in a minute.
Tell us about what happened.
Crusader.
There was
a big exercise come up called Crusader. That's when all TA units were mobilised, went to Germany. And we was lucky enough to be flown out on the Caledonian Airways with air hostesses and all that business. Of course, there was a lot of chiking, took us up, flew us over. They flew us to a place called Wildermuth. It was an RAF base. And what we had to do there was, it was all over England. All the TA units went to Germany. Combat engineers, water, power supplies, fuel supplies, railways, bridge builders, building all that. And incorporated in that would be a gas attack, a badly damaged railways, badly damaged this, oil refineries, and each unit had to do their own part. So we've flown out to Wildermuth, nice base, and we was given a section of line, which was hardly used, and we was told that during the night, saboteurs had been in and blown it. Also, it had been badly bombed. Now, we had to make do with what was there to replace this railway. Also, around us was communications. There was an oil depot that was being seen to. And all the time, you had your NBC suit with you because we was told there'd probably be a nuclear attack, NBC gas. Now, This was blown up. This was also part of our trade test. The line went into Wildermuth, which was an RAF base, but it also went into underground bunkers. Now, this line had been taken out, and they wanted it back as quick as possible. So the scenario was, make do with what you got. Sleep has been damaged, so what we had to do was put rails in, take old rails out, put rails in, stagger the sleepers out, so instead of having one every about 2 to 3 foot, we had one every 7 foot. So, just to get the transport running to get supplies in and out. During this exercise, a warning went, alert, NBC will be attacked by planes. And what they used to do is come over and drop flour bags. And what you had to do then was drop everything, buddy, buddy up, NBC suit up with no time, and somebody come round and say, too late, you're out, this is out. Then, once you've got it on, you lay fully flat on the ground. Originally, you're not supposed to do any work while you've got these suits on. But one of our officers had a different idea. He said, right, we want to see if you can lift rails with these suits on and your gloves on. So, we've got a 60-foot bit of rail, and they spaced us out along this rail to pick it up and carry it about 10 or 15 yards. And one of the umpires said that it cannot be done because if you tear or punch your suit, you're out of action. Although you had repair kits with it, which you could slap over it. So, of course, he didn't like that, so that was out. So, all clear, went, get out your NBC suits, carry on laying the track and that. And the funny part is we was taking out 1917-1918 Krupps rails and plates. The plates are a big metal plate which the rail sits in and you fix it to the rail. They was 1917 we was taking out and we was putting back 1979 back. Laid the rails completely out, pack it out with stones and all. Now, this went on for 2 or 3 days because it although you're saying it like this, it wasn't a 5-minute job. It had to be done. Then it had to be checked. Then our lads in the transport would run a light engine over backwards and forwards to see it was secure. Then a few wagons would come over. Then once it was all the exercise was over, you reinstated the track how it should be. So what you were doing really was taking sleepers out here and there as though they'd been damaged, but they was good sleepers. And once the exercise was over, you put the sleepers back. And what we used to get a lot of is, because we was at a regular camp, regular army camp, when we went down to the NAF in the evening, we got triarched by the young lads. Oh, here come the old boys, the scroungers, the mumpers, the moaners, getting money for nothing. Well, little Titch, he was a coal miner by trade, but he served in Malaya. One or two others served in Cyprus and all this business. Some were in the Suez. And so, of course, when we got in there, they started triarching with us, all that. And we'd invited our officers into the mess for a drink, which they couldn't come into your, what's the name of that invitation? So they're sitting there and all that, and these blokes started, we're playing darts, and they kept pinching the darts. Go on home, Dad's Army, you're only here for a couple of weeks and you'll be away. So Tit said, see him, Malcolm, so he said, yeah, he said, he spent his time in Korea and Japan. He was in Germany before you was born, type of thing. So, and he was in Malaya, he was in the Suez. And once they knew that, the attitude seemed to change. Then one of our officers spoke to him. He said, who do you think? He said, I'm Lieutenant Spooner. He said, or I'm Professor, whatever it was. And he said, what we do the jobs that you can't do because we're tradesmen. You're taken away to, what's that? And you defend us. So this bloke said, well, what do you mean by that? He said, well, being an engineer, you're a corps. And he said, you realise that one of my men, whether it's a private or a corporal, can go to your office and say, I need 6 blokes or I need 10 blokes. And he has to give them because we are doing a job of importance and you are just God. And you will guard us, whether you like it or not. It is your job to make us safe. Because without us, you don't move, your supplies don't move. And after that, with tender, it changed completely. We had a chance to go to Berlin and see Checkpoint Charlie and various places like that for a short time, come back again, do a bit of shopping, and the exercise was over then.
Now, what about on a more normal, because that's a big, that was a huge
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
What about on a normal sort of annual exercise? What
a normal, we went to, got invited to go to Düsseldorf.
Were the annual camps always in Germany?
Yes, our basic main, what's name, was Germany, because of the Russian situation there with the Cold War. It was, what's that? So mainly Germany. We did get a chance once to go to Gibraltar, but when we started, we went to Düsseldorf. Now out there they used to have a complete train made up. It used to be the East train and the West train. The East trains were made up with everything from canteens, washing room, medicals, and mainly done by Germans or displaced personnel. And they lived on the train, and that was their job. And they didn't like anybody coming in, because when we arrived, we was in civvies. Gets on the train, then they started woofing away in German and all this business. One of our blokes, who was with the engineers out there, could speak good German. And he told them that we were all ex-servicemen, plus we were reserve servicemen, doing a job, and it was our training to learn about. And there, once again, the old attitude chain. I mean, they had washrooms, they had washing machines, they had social drinking, cooking, and we mucked in with them and we stayed with them backwards and forwards on this line.
What were you doing on this train?
We was working on the sidings. We was laying in points. That was one of my jobs, to fix up end points. Different to what they got in England, different setup. And we dismantled, renewed, tested, got their German co-parts to come along and test, and lay tracks out, and also ballast. Learned to drive a forklift truck. The blokes who were actually men that worked on cranes were doing familiarising with the German type of cranes. I learned to drive a forklift truck, and all different types of work that was needed, carrying stone, delivering, packing, and...
Now, what about the Gibraltar one? Did you go to that one?
Yeah, it was just a week. What they were doing was trying to get the guns down from the concealed tunnels up there and bring them down by rail. So we had to lay a small track down from the top to bring the guns down lower to the Gibraltar front. And that was just for a week type of thing.
And what do you remember about the Gibraltar one?
Not a lot. It was warm, quite pleasant. And that was it. Getting back to the engineers, when we was with the engineers, the Falklands flared up.
That's what next question. Yeah, well, tell us about the Falklands campaign.
Well, we were at Barton Stacey, and I don't know whether the barracks is still there, but it was a more of a store compa.
Had you moved from Farnborough then, or was
no?
It
we was Farnborough, but they
we called up for the Falklands.
No, we was because I was in the TA. We was at this camp. What else? Barton Stacey camp. And we were sorting out equipment there.
What sort of equipment did you do?
It was engines, motors, various equipment like shovels, spades. We're doing like an inventory. And we was there. Of course, the Falklands started. And the major come around. He says, we need volunteers to load up Sir Galahad with equipment, drums of oil and all this business. So he said, some of you may be going to the Falklands. He said, anybody interested? So we put our hands up. So he says, no, no, no. He says, you've done your bit. You're a bit old. So I said, I still want to go. So he said, well, where do you want to go? I said, well, tell you the truth, sir. Get another medal. And he just laughed. He said, no. He said, you've done your bit. He said, it's for younger personnel. He said, it's going to be an hectic trip on the boat, he said, and it's going to be rough out there. I said, well, we had an hectic trip going to Korea. I said, what's that? He said, no, this would be different. He said, but thanks for your offer. He said, so would you go down and help to load up Sir Galahad with material, which was ammunition and all that. But what a lot of us didn't, we thought to ourselves and talked after, didn't agree with, is loading a ship with explosive material plus men. I know during the Second World War it was a, but this was modern day. And we thought, no, it's not right that you should have troops with flammable materials, ammunition, petrol and all that business in the same ship, because if it got a hit, boom, that was it. Because troops always travelled separate to the supply ships.
And you said that at the time, before the disaster happened?
Yes.
And how were you loading? Tell me about the loading.
Well, we went down to load up. We loaded stuff into nets, which the crane picked up and loaded them on. Some stuff we carried on board the ship. And mainly the explosive cargo was done by the people that was in the demolition, what's name? Bomb disposal unit type of thing. They checked everything that was safe and secure, and we just done the general donkey work.
Anything you remember about that?
No, not offhand. No, that's all about.
Now, and anything else before we leave? Because you stayed with them until 1983.
Well, as I say, it was mainly track work and all that business.
So you just had basically the annual camp,
yes.
2 weeks every year, and that was it?
Yes.
Now, so you left. Why did you leave in 83?
Well, we got information. I didn't want to leave, but we came down through the line that the government was cutting back on Army personnel and TA units costing. So they said, because you're of a certain age, you're no longer required. So that was. But when I was coming out, they said to me, there is a unit now starting up called the Home Service Force. So I said, well, what does that mean? He said, well, it's anybody of a certain age or over the age of a normal TA unit, and you were purely based in England. So I thought, well, yeah, give it a chance. So I went to Forest Gate.
Is that where they were based?
Yeah, no, that was just the recruiting office. So I went in there and I said to the sergeant, you know, I said, it was the Army recruiting office. So I said, come to inquire about this Home Service Force. I said, our unit has just been disbanded due to age. Although there was younger Indian blokes there, like. So he said, oh, two, I've never heard of it, he said. So I said, well, it's something to do with ex-service personnel of a certain age who would still like to do their bit. He said, well, I should think you've had enough, haven't you? I said, Oh, I said, once you get into it. So there was this big cabinet, pulls this drawer open like that, and there was a single sheet of paper that says, volunteers for home service duties, mainly UK, unless required. He said, well, I've got two here, he said. I've got the Horse Artillery, which is stationed near Moorgate. He said, oh, I've got the Intercourt City Army Royal Signal Unit. So he said, what do you used to do? I said, work on the railway in the signalling, what's name, running out cables. He said, well, he said, if you join the Horse Artillery, it's going to cost you about £100 a year messing fees. I said, well, I ain't going to pay £100 a year, am I? So he said, well, why don't you try the Inns of Court? And that was at 10 Chancery Lane, where all the solicitors and lawyers are. So I thought, right, TA Centre was one side of the road, and all the solicitors were the other side. And a majority of them were the Inns of Court.
And this is 83. Yeah. Well, it'd be 84 by the time you joined.
So I went there, knocked on the door, boat said, yeah, I said, what's that? Hold on, let's see if you're on a register. Signed a register. Yeah, what's your name? I said, Malcolm Barker. Yeah. I said, I'm ex-army. Oh, all right, come in. It was only a young lad of about 18, 19, I suppose he was. And he looked at me, he said, bloody hell, he said, it's getting like Dad's army in here. So I said, well, it is home defence, I said, like the home guard. So when I gets upstairs, there's about 8 to 10 of us, all over 40-ish, or around about 30, 40-ish. There were blokes that had been in the Navy. We had helicopter pilots. We had the Royal Green Jackets. We had signals. We had engineers, infantry units, drivers, clerical workers, all that. So we all sat round. So he was then Captain Duxbury. Very nice chap, spoke, what's that? And he was ex-service, and he was starting this unit up. He was in the actual unit of the Royal Signals, what's that? In St. Colt. And one or two officers walking about, they had their own bar and all this business. And, of course, sat there, and we got called in individually to Captain Duxbury. It then turned out to be Major. So he gets called in, he says, you're a little bit over the top, really, he says, for your age. So I said, well, yeah, I suppose so. I said, so he said, well, providing you pass the medical, he said, where did you serve? I said, Germany. I said, I went to, done my basic course, live firing. I said, then I went to Korea. He said, Korea? So I said, yeah, then Japan. He says, well, he said, providing I get confirmation, he said, I can't see why you shouldn't be it. He said, what do you do? I worked on the railway cabling. He said, yeah. He said, we need cablers. So I didn't take much notice what that was. So he said, you'll be hearing for us within a fortnight. He said, either way, you will receive a letter. It will either say, yes, would you please come for another medical, come for an interview, or it will say, sorry, thank you very much, but I'll say. So I didn't took no notice. Went back to work. Then I get this letter. Can you report on a Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the Intercourt, number 10 Stone Buildings, Chancery Lane? Because on the gate there, they had the security guards and all that. You showed them that and they'll let you in. So that's when the IRA was also in their active mode. Totally. So you had to be checked in, knocks on the door, come in, show pass, come in, upstairs, blah, blah, give us a spill and all this business. And I said, yeah. And of course, there's a few more blokes coming there. We got to know each other, and those that had been ex-service seemed to be in one group, and those that hadn't done any service in another group. So, right, he said, this is introductory. You will get issued with combat jackets, combat boots, combat trousers, shirts, woolly pulley, your hat, and the new Inns of Court badge. He said, we're going to have the original Inns of Court badge.
So is this unit just called the Inns of Court Royal Signals?
Inns of Court City Army Royal Signals. I think it was 486 or 460, something like that. But it was the Inns of Court Royal Signal unit.
You're not sure it's 460?
Not often, no.
Right.
Hold on. Let's,
Now, we just looked, it's Home Service Force Squadron, Royal yeah. Signals Intercorps, that, yeah. And, yeah. and you joined around about 84.
Yes.
So certainly you finished in November 83 with the others. Yeah. So you kitted out, and then what happened then?
Then we was told to report mainly Tuesday nights for drill nights.
And what were drill nights like? What would you do on a drill night?
Come there, we would do a bit of marching up and down, and they give us SLR rifles. There were 7.6 rifle. Never seen a rifle before. That was known because mainly, you know, 303s and whatever. And it was new. It was an automatic rifle, very powerful, and it was quite an impressive weapon because you could go single and automatic. So we trained on that. Then they trained certain people to use Morse code. We all had a go at using radios, PAC radios, for intimate communication. That's when they were saying, like, Sunray 1 to Sunray and all that business. And you used to go into various classes. You learnt first aid. If somebody had an accident, CPR for the old heart attacks. Because I was on the railway and I've dealt with cables, they gave me a job as cable layer or cable runner.
Now, what does that mean?
Well, I thought it was a bloke running around with messages, but I soon found out. They got a contraption like an L-frame with a drum of cable. It was twin cable on a drum, and there was about, 150 yards of cable on this drum. You strapped it on your back, and if the cable got damaged, it was your job with a mate to go out, run this cable out, connect it up and test it through back to all court, so you've got a complete cable. And that was a cable, and that was my job to run this cable out.
And would you repair any breaks?
Yes, yeah. Dry jointed. You had a knife and a pair of pliers, a pair of side cutters, and you would strip the cables, stagger the joints, strip them, twist them together, and you could leave them just without any tape or anything if you had any, for quick emergencies. So you do 1 6 inches one way and 1 6 inches the other way, so they wouldn't tap and cause a short on the line. Of course, I'd done that in, that was my job, so I was no wonder about that. Not so good on the Morse. I was no good on the Morse. We done map reading, and then we was told what our job would be. Our main job would be to underground bunkers throughout London, protect the Queen, not particularly MPs, because when you joined up, you swore allegiance to the Queen, not the government, because governments change. So was that we was water supplies, food, gas, electricity, and transport. That was our main. That was the Home Service's duty to guard these units. Of you also had Home Service with, I say, also artillery. You had all over the country. There was these Home Service units being set up. Whether they were thinking about there might be riots, because you would be called out to assist in riots. And you was taught all this. So that was going all right. And our Colonel in Chief was the Queen Mother. And we were doing a recruiting exercise to get more people in at Bexley Heath. We was invited to bring the wives and family along. We was camped up, we had set up a little bunker here, and a couple of blokes were handing out pamphlets, inviting people in. There was tea and biscuits for people came in, doing little exercises like crossing a kind of a small river and ropes across the bridge and all that. You went across, and you, if anybody wanted to try the young kids on it, just to get them interested. So then we was told that Princess Anne will be visiting us. So the wife, being a diabetic like she is, she carries all her stuff. So I said to the bloke, where can we put the missus's bag to be out of the way? And there's tables laid out. All the families were there with their children. Of course, everybody, when they knew Princess Anne was coming, they got a little bit excited. My missus put her bag down. We just walked away, and these blokes from, I don't know what they must have been observing out the building, saw the wife put her bag down and swooped on it. So we explained it to them. "When do you need it, madam?" So the wife said, "About dinner time." "Right, we'll take it inside, we'll keep it with us." So we're cammed up, we've got our SLRs, we've got pouches on, combat outfits on and that. And this helicopter circle, down it came, and that come Princess Anne. I think she was in a lemony outfit. So she comes along speaking to all the ladies, spoke to my daughter who was young, her face went red, spoke to the wife. She noticed the wife had a Women's Section Legion badge on. "Oh," she said, "Royal British Legion, Women's Section." So the wife said, "Yes." So she said, "And what does your husband think about that?" So she said, "He's over there with his face black." Well, there's about 20 of us with our face black top. She said, "That's him there. He's in the Legion." "Oh, so you've got something in common." Spoke to me daughter and all that. My daughter was a bit tongue-tied and all that. So, of course, they'd laid these tables out. And a bloke come up to her. I suppose one of her, she said, "Excuse me, ma'am, we're 20 minutes late." She said, "So what? I've not met everybody yet." She said, "And I'm dying for a cup of tea. I suppose you ladies are as well, aren't you?" So they're like, and they hadn't set a table for her because they didn't know she was stopping. So out comes this trestle table, and you could see it where we were standing. They was getting new crockery out of the boxes, and it still had like a straw and all that, and they had to wipe them all down and lay a special. And by the time she left there, she was 3/4 an hour leaving there, and she thanked everybody, and what's name? She wished us best in the recruiting, and up, and away she went.
Any other story? You can't have been in that long just because of your age. How long were you in the intercorps?
Well, I was in there for standby for the first Gulf War.
So right up to 91?
Yeah, 91, 92.
Well, tell us a bit. Anything else you remember?
Yeah,
about
we'd done an exercise. I forget. Back in Beacons. And it was cold and desolate place up there.
And what type of an exercise was it?
It was a security exercise. It was a kind of a load of complex bunkers and a big kind of country house. And in there, they're supposed to have been top knob officers planning and all this business. So it was our job to guard and take over this building and the gates. And we was told that the powers will attack this, as enemy, will attack this complex with bunkers. We had to go up on roofs and we had to check that there'd been nothing left. No booby traps, no nothing left. Then when you'd done a stint on the roof, he came down. So we're on guard outside, because they had the main outside patrolling guards inside, and we maintained the doors for the big bunkers, slide open. It was a lot of stuff underground type of thing. It was supposed to be all hush-hush, but I suppose I don't know what to do. So we're doing this guard. They'd already caught two blokes at the gate trying to get in with false IDs. And up come these cars, all flags flying. And "I'm Brigadier so-and-so." So they let him through, unfortunately. He comes up to us to go into this bunker. It was me and Titch. Titch was about, he was a gas fitter from Dagenham. He was about 5 foot so-and-so. So we're standing there. So I said, "Somebody's coming." So I said, "Halt. Can I see your ID, sir?" Always said, "Sir," because you didn't know. Oh, he said, I'm Brigadier Lieutenant Colonel. I said, "I'm sorry, sir, I must have ID." "Do you know who I am?" I said, "No, sir." I said, "Do you know who we are?" So he said, "No." I said, "We're a special unit," because he thought we was a SAS, S-A-S. So Titch looked at me. So he cocks his weapon. We had no ammunition. It was blank, mate. So he cocks his weapon. He said, "I must inform you, sir, that we are armed personnel." So he said, I'll have you too. He said, "I'll have you stripped." I said, "Well, we can't get any." We was classed as troopers then. I said, "You can't get any load of what we are." So he said, "Right." So called the guard commander out. Guard commander took him inside, searched him and stripped him. And this bloke was so irate that he took all our names and numbers. And in the end, he got told off for not having his ID card. And on top of the roof where we was earlier, somebody must have got on there and set a couple of booby traps with remote controls, and they went off. And of course, all hell let loose. There was hollering, shouting, bangs, and thunder flashes. And it was just like we was being attacked. Then that was over, and that was that 10 days. Come back again.